Okay, welcome to the Sports for Champions podcast. My name is Jordan, I'm going to be the host. As you can see, we've got a brand new setup. So we've got new shiny camera, we've got lighting that hopefully is not blinding you. And then we also have you, which is kind of like the main feature, the main event of the day. So I'm joined by James Bunting, who is a team sprint cyclist for Team GB. And he's also under 23 European champion. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
So I'm originally from Sheffield, that's my hometown. And I've recently moved to Manchester to be part of the GB squad, and that was a couple of years ago now. This year picked up a European title, and yeah, I've been cycling for quite a number of years, and the main sort of focus for me is the next Olympics, which will be Paris.
So Paris, obviously on the agenda, and as you mentioned, you've been cycling since around 2012, was it? 20?
Yeah, just after the London Games.
So just after the London Games, so that kind of inspired you to kind of want to do something similar. So obviously you identified like heroes, and from there, now you want to become the hero.
Yeah, hopefully.
So coming to like Paris 2024, it's 2024, isn't it?
Yeah,
so obviously I'm getting confused because you've got the Winter Olympics in 2022. The Olympics has just been as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on, kind of, in the athlete world at the moment. Yeah. So kind of, have you got a timeline or like a schedule of like things you need to do to get to that point to be good enough for 2024?
Yeah, so there's, ever since I got on the program, there's always been a trajectory of times we need to hit and performances we need to do to sort of put us in that that team. So we're coming up to sort of the start of 2022, there'll be like Nations Cups more high profile races where we'll sort of run like a team selection and see how it goes, and then we'll train on that and work on the times we hit there. Yeah. And that'll sort of, since obviously we haven't raced much during COVID, so it's been quite hard to sort of, obviously we've had a few races towards the end of the year that's been crammed in, but it's been quite hard to sort of see where everyone's at.
I was going to say, with everything starting to like normalize now, obviously as you say, they've crammed everything because they know now's like the best chance to get everyone together. And that's always the difficulty with something like a pandemic like COVID, is that you might have one person that's not very well, and because that kind of, especially in a team oriented sport, it's really difficult to get everyone together feeling healthy, fit, and then obviously like living in different places, hence you moving to Manchester, you said, wasn't it? So now that you're all kind of in a similar area, is it going to be a lot easier to train to kind
of... massively, yeah.
Yeah. And you train quite a lot. You were just telling me, obviously, you do all weekend pretty much as part of your current regime.
Yeah.
So obviously with like competitions and in the run-up to 2024, how important are those? How much like weight is there on you to do well in those? Or are they more kind of just to see if you're in the right kind of...
So
space.
There is quite a bit riding on the competitions coming up through obviously selections, because selections of the games they don't get picked the week before, they're picked quite an extensive way out from the Olympics. So we sort of really need to be up there as soon as we can, basically.
Right.
But a lot of the pressure is sort of like internal pressure that I'll put on myself. Obviously the coaches want you to do well. The team wants you to do well, but there's no pressure like the pressure you put on yourself.
I was going to say, internal pressure, though, you can kind of like read that in one of two ways. Either you see it as a highly competitive, driven person, which is exactly what you need for the kind of sport that you're doing, because obviously it's high intensity, it's fast, but at the same time, sometimes that kind of pressure can be debilitating.
Yeah.
So it depends on how well you're able to like cope with that pressure. And I'd assume, obviously, because you're still quite young, so I'm sure you've got a lot to learn. Yeah. But at the same time, I'd imagine to be where you are already, you must have some kind of coping mechanisms to deal with that kind of pressure.
Yeah, there's music is, especially on race day, is a big one.
You're not the first person to say that. It seems to be like a general like correlation between most of the athletes that we've had in speak to. And they all have that same thing, music. It just kind of... calming, I suppose. Yeah. What kind of music would you listen to? Like pre-race.
It sort of depends. When I'm sort of warming up, I'll listen to something that will get me a bit more hyped.
Yeah.
Whether it be like rock music or rap music, there's no genre specific. I like all types of music.
Yeah.
But when I was a junior, I actually found Elton John.
Oh yeah.
Right before the race, a real good.
Just a real good motivator.
They were just chilling out, yeah.
It's weird. I don't suppose you ever saw, like, you know when Tyson Fury fought Deontay Wilder for the second time? And he put a Patsy Cline song on, which is like a 60s song that's very kind of mental health oriented, and I think it's called Crazy.
Right.
And it's just, it didn't fit with the tone of the fight. And obviously you see Deontay Wilder walking out to like some like all guns blazing song.
Yeah.
Yet Tyson Fury listens to this song that's very like intimidating because it's just so out of sync and context with the event.
Yeah.
So I suppose like Elton John probably does the same, like in the same way.
It's weird. It's,
if it works for you though, that's kind of, there's nothing wrong with that at all. In the same way that like Michael Phelps, you'd always, I don't know if you've ever seen that like meme of him where he sat like he's got a hood on right before he's about to compete, obviously, and he's just like, his face is like thunder. He looks like he's, I don't know if I'd say it, but he looks like he's about to like throttle someone.
Yeah.
But that kind of anger kind of pushed him, and he used to like credit a lot of his success. I mean, he had like 23 gold medals or whatever, and he credited like most of those to listening to music in the run up and having that adrenaline built up. So. Yeah. As a lot of other people prefer kind of calm, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, I would opt for music as well. So, I've got a bunch of questions. Obviously, it's going to be very free reign, so we'll ask some questions. We'll have a little chit-chat as well. I've got sport-specific questions, personal questions. Not when I say personal, not, like, delving deep into your, like, family history and stuff. I've got some fun random questions and then some, like, sports psychology questions. So the first one that I've got is, what informed your decision to become a track cyclist as opposed to a road cyclist? And is there any crossover? Do you do a bit of both or?
See, when I was a youth, that was a sort of telling point where when I was going to change to, because I did everything when I was real quite young.
Yeah.
Just because we had to. So when I first started, I was on the sort of, it was called the ODA then, which was the Olympic Development Apprentice. When I was like 15, 16.
What made you think to get on that program? Was that something your parents encouraged? Or was that something that you'd always just... Because most children at that... Like, I say children, but most people at that kind of age wouldn't really think to go out of their way.
When I got to the bunch sprint,
yeah,
I'd be like bike wheels in front of people.
Right, gotcha.
So that was a sort of... tell inside, and then I did a few different bits on the track, and I just sort of I took to that quite well.
Just felt natural, a bit more natural than the longer
racing.
I was gonna say, like, in terms of like my own personal experience of like sport, I've always found that activities that are like more explosive like fit me a lot better as well. Like, I've started commuting to work, and like completely different. Obviously, I'm not comparing at all. It's like apples oranges, but when I like cycle, I'll find that. Endurance wise or like long distance, I feel like people just tend to have better technique.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it comes to like a sprint, because my dad's a keen cyclist, and like obviously like in Wales, like hills, tons of everything. And like in terms of like the sprinting, I'd always find that like I'd be able to maintain that kind of like power and stamina.
Yeah.
And I just like destroy him on those hills.
Yeah.
Granted, he is my dad and he's quite a bit older. So that's not really a claim to fame. But yeah, like you say, some things just come a little bit more natural to yourself. So sprinting obviously for you, which is pretty awesome, but also probably quite terrifying because it's split second and like make or break, right?
Yeah definitely.
Because you were saying you started training on, was it like your stop starts, or I don't know what you call it,
standing starts
and is that literally standing from like the block
when depending what position you ride, if you ride P1 that starts the team sprint, you'd be in a start gate.
Right.
Whereas if you ride P2 and P3, you're held up by a coach.
Right.
So they'll hold under the saddle and sort of support you with their leg. And a bit of its balance as well.
How long do they do that for? How long have they stood there holding for the duration of the other person going around before?
No. So we all set off at the same time.
Okay.
Like on race day, the countdown will be from 60 seconds.
I see.
And then obviously when the countdown stops, we all accelerate off and sort of fall into formation.
Like, what's the most difficult portion, like, obviously, of the sprint? Because how long would you say it takes you generally? Is it to get around the track once, is it?
Well, no, because there's three riders, we do three laps. So
yeah, okay.
We all do a lap each and they pull off from the front.
And what's, like, the average time to kind of, would you
say? We do it in about 43, 44 seconds.
Right. And I'm sure, like, the record...
The world record's, like, 41 something.
Is it 41?
41.8, I think.
Which, when you compare that to 43, a lot of people will think, oh, that's not particularly significant.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you think of any times this type of sprinting and, like, two, you know, shading 2 seconds is, like, a big, big deal, isn't it? Yeah,
especially... We're over 750 meter, 2 seconds is that's a pretty big chunk.
That's a lot to kind of. Yeah. So I'd imagine that would like require you to have like the perfect start.
Yeah.
For all of you, so if you're all like, so there are two teams, are there? Have I read that right? Because I read that one team starts on one side and the other team.
Yes, it's like head to head.
Got it. That's cool.
So depending,
do you cross paths?
You shouldn't do. Not over 3 laps. Yeah. Something would have to go wrong for you to get caught. The speeds were going.
Okay, so if you were caught, then clearly you're never making the team again.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right, gotcha. But do you get any, like, indication? Because, like, one of the questions I've got here is, like, do you get an indication of how the other team is doing? Or is it because you're so head down, kind of?
Yeah, it's... I think when the race is that sort of short, you can't... You've just got to think about you and your team. Because as soon as you sort of... try and think what the others are doing. You're not focused on your task.
Yeah, you're wasting time and you're wasting energy as well by doing that, aren't you?
Yeah, it's just trying to get from A to B as quick as you can.
Yeah, because recently as well, we had a tandem Paralympic cyclist called James Ball who was in. I was like, is it a common thing to be called James if you're a cyclist?
We train together in the gym.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, he's awesome. He's from Wales as well, isn't he? So like we had that in common. Obviously, I'm not from Sheffield, but I kind of wish I was. Sean Bean is right. Is it Sean Bean?
I'm really not sure.
You're like, who the hell is Sean Bean? Again, that's me showing my age. But yeah, James Ball came in and we had like a really cool talk about kind of a similar kind of deal. And he was saying that whenever he's in a race, you're just so focused. And you're just so in the zone. Because I asked him whether he gets a chance to speak to his partner. I think it was his partner, Lawrence or Lewis.
Lewis,
isn't it? Yeah. So I was asking whether he gets a chance to actually like communicate with him. And he was saying... kind of, but you don't really hear
one word answers.
Yeah, most of the kind of like talking is done in the preparation phase before you go out there, so it's pretty epic though. So obviously you mentioned roles is a big thing, and like the race depends on what role you're participating in.
Yeah,
so like what role would you say that you generally take up?
See, when I was a junior, I was always the starter,
right?
And then turning senior just due to who was in the team.
Yeah.
I then went into P3, so I was finishing it. So it's like...
I was going to say, if you're in the third place, was it something to do with... Where did I read it? It's something to do with, like, the time trial or something. If you've, like, people that are generally better at time trials...
Yeah, the people with more sort of length within their racing capability go in the...
In that spot.
That spot.
Right. Is it because it's more, like, tailored towards... endurance or
it's just you build up such a sort of like lactic from it, it's just
people get tired from
that.
And is that when like you generally go the hardest, like in
yeah
the third,
like
because you're just trying to win at that point, right?
Yeah, there's no pain like finishing a team sprint in three,
yeah,
because you're flat out for like 44 seconds, like there's no let up in it. It's
when you
just
get to the end, do you just like keep doing a couple of laps just to kind of help with your legs,
Well, usually you can't.
You just slam your brakes on, fly over the handlebars.
There's another heat after you, so you need to be off the track within like a lap or two.
Oh, so people.
So you're getting off the track. Your like helpers, your mechanics, your coaches unstrap your feet.
Yeah.
And help you walk down the ramp.
Because when I cycle to work, I get off the bike and my legs are like the muscles. You know your quads.
Yeah.
I should know that. Your quads are just like burning, and you're like. You're walking heavy and it feels like a leg... Well, it is a leg workout, isn't it? Even more so when you're sprinting, for sure.
Yeah, straight to the bin, though, as soon as you've...
Just do you, like... What kind of procedures do you take after? Do you, like, ice or...?
I lay there for a bit and...
wallow in your own self.
Yeah, moan about how much my legs hurt.
Yeah.
And then I...
It's like a passage of rites if you're in that sport. It's like everyone just sits next to each other like, your legs hurting? Mine too.
Yeah.
So really epic.
And then try and spin the legs out as quick as you can, because you'll have another round.
Do you have like massage guns or anything? Do you kind of
tend not to use them? Yeah, we tend not to use them on race day. Yeah. Sort of spin your legs out and Because you'll have another round.
When you say spin your legs, is that something you do on the bike?
Yeah, yeah. So we'll jump on like either rollers or a turbo trainer.
I see, and you'll literally just kind of
turn over in a little gear.
Yeah, because I was going to say that will like help kind of get the blood pumping a little bit more, and obviously like the lactic acid, that's going to be an issue otherwise, isn't it? So obviously we've talked a little bit kind of about you coming into the sport. So kind of like now that you're like fully ingrained in the sport, and obviously it's more focused on teams, do you still do like individual racing?
Yeah, so the individual is still a big sort of part of the cycling team, but prestigiously team sprint is that's the main one you want to come out on top in, which is where a lot of the focus goes.
Are they a lot of them like qualifiers, like time trial qualifiers? I read up about, because obviously I've looked at like the Kieran, the kilometer time trial, the sprint, the team sprint.
Yeah, so normally like when you do a team sprint, there might be, I don't know, 12 to 16 teams entered depending what sort of event it is.
Right.
And top 8 qualify.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So obviously, and then you're obviously ranked in quickest qualifier, slowest qualifier, and then fastest goes against slowest.
Oh, so it's a bit kind of like with like football, obviously, when you come top of your group, you generally tend to go against someone that's in the lower portion of the other group.
I don't know why, that's just how I guess the privilege of qualifying first. Don't complain
about that, sounds amazing. Yeah, I mean, you've worked hard enough to get first, then you deserve to. Yeah. I mean, I suppose you don't not see them as competition because they're still going to be very fast and very good athletes. But obviously, in the back of your mind, does that help? Does that confidence boost?
Yeah, it's such a relief, especially. There's been occasions where we've been, like, it's the second round of the team sprint competition and we've got somebody, like, over half a second slower.
Oh,
it's so like, you can afford to, like, even switch somebody in and out of the team.
Because
so you just to save legs, of, yeah.
Yeah. How many people are on your team, then, if it's three people actually race?
So at a race for the team sprint, four people will be on the start list.
Right.
And then you always got to take a reserve. If you only take three people,
someone gets injured,
and someone pulls the hamstring and can't ride, the whole team misses.
I was about to ask, would you say like hamstring is probably one of the like major injuries? I was gonna say it's gonna be mostly your legs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe your back, I'd imagine.
Yeah, there is quite a few back injuries that can go around.
Yeah, kind of like upper back or like lower. You'd imagine, because obviously, I don't know, like how are you positioned on the bike? Do you kind of, like, because obviously I've got a question asked about like the handlebars, the actual frame of the bike. Because James Ball mentioned, obviously, the tandem bike is a little bit, not significant, but compared to what I'd imagine you'll be cycling on, it's probably a reasonable bit heavier.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So like, what kind of like frame or shell? I don't know, do you call it a frame or a shell?
Frame.
Okay, cool. Frame. I want to get like technical, so I sound I have like a good understanding. My dad would probably be like, if he was watching right now, like a fly on the wall, he'd be like, you're saying everything wrong. But do you have just like, you won't have regular handlebars, you'll have the ones over, I'd imagine.
Yeah, the full sort of carbon, integrated, so they all fit inside everything, so it's as aero as it can be.
And so it's like aerodynamic, so you obviously, like, I'd imagine like the gear that you're wearing is very like aerodynamic and quite tight fitting, obviously, to avoid
uncomfortably tight.
Is it really? Yeah. So is it kind of like a Borat Mankini? Nice.
It's not as bad as that.
Okay, that's good. I was gonna say that'll be a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, like with like the seating arrangements, do you kind of like lean right down? Do you all have to have a set position that you like take?
Yeah, the positions are uncomfy.
Yeah.
But we're in them for such short periods of time. You train to sort of withstand that.
Yeah, because what I found, like, when I do my bit of, like, if I'm sat up on the bike, it's quite a comfortable ride.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm lower down on it, you feel it way more in your legs, but at the same time, you feel like you've got a lot more power and control.
Yeah.
Which I'd imagine is exactly what you want for sprinting, isn't it? So like, the dynamics of it kind of makes more sense to be, like, lower and just
As tucked in as you can, sort of your elbows tucked in. And
how do you manage to keep like your vision? How do you see things, or do you not?
You don't.
So you just know like the layout.
Trust your teammates, and you know where they're going to be changing, where you need to go.
And are you you're in like the same lane essentially?
Yeah.
Like, tucked in right behind each other,
right on the wheel, right behind.
I always find that insane, because like when I watch like the Tour de France even, and you see the pelotons, and you see everyone's like tucked in, but the wheels are like so close.
Yeah, millimeters.
How do you maintain that without kind of a small blip in your radar and just do you? Does that happen?
Nah, it's never. So autonomous. Like you just, we just do it so often. We don't think about it.
It's just like second nature to you. Yeah. And was it like that always? Like the moment you started, do you ever feel like, oh God, I've got to keep my distance a bit? Or
when I first started, maybe, but we do it so often. And we ride with the same guys so often, you just...
It just becomes, like, natural. Yeah. It's pretty epic to be able to kind of... Like, you're, like, riding the wave sort of thing in a way, yeah, aren't yeah. you? And you're just... You're all in synchronicity. Which I know a lot of people would say kind of individual sports, you've got more control. But it must be something to, like, celebrate and something pretty special about all of you achieving something together.
Yeah, that's nice.
Like, you know that not one of you was good. All three of you have accomplished something yeah. that is pretty insane when you think about it, to be honest. You mentioned, obviously, you're from Sheffield originally. I don't know how long you lived. I'd imagine most of your life.
Yeah, all my life up until 18.
Right, okay. So your experience of, like... Having lived, I've been to Sheffield a couple of times, and like the thing that struck me, and a lot of people mention it as well, is the amount of hills that you have in Sheffield. So has that like played any role kind of in your choice to become, not to become a cyclist, but do you feel like it's helped you in any capacity?
Yeah, definitely when I was doing like the road racing and like,
yeah.
I was just doing everything. Yeah, massively, because... It helped me build the endurance. It helped me build the sort of strength and power. I did a lot of training on the roads.
Yeah. How confident were you on like the roads? Like always quite comfortable.
Yeah, just, yeah. I mean, when I first started, I was a bit shaky and a bit wobbly.
Yeah.
Like everyone.
Are you one of these people that can sit up on your bike without your hands and everything?
Yeah, yeah. I do that around the track.
How
do
you do that? Because I keep trying to do it. I just can't manage a way.
It's just...
Is it confidence?
Yeah, it's just practice, and as long as you don't do it where there's not massive crosswinds, because you don't want to take your hands off and get blown off.
Maybe that's the issue I'm having, is that whenever I commute into work, because it's so windy.
I wouldn't do it when it's windy.
Right, so you want to do it on quite like a still day. Okay, makes
on a quiet sense. Road in case you start swerving a little
do
bit.
Do you have to have good posture for it or something? Because I was like,
No,
I need to figure this out.
Just take your hands off and just pedal.
See, my dad, whenever I go with him, he's just, like, comfortably doing it, drinking his water or whatever he's got. And then I'm just there, like... I have to do everything with one hand. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so you've always been quite comfortable on the roads anyway.
Yeah.
So that transition, like, was quite seamless-ish. But, like, obviously, you're going from somewhere that's, like, very hilly. And, obviously, like, I notice it whenever I... jump on a treadmill as opposed to kind of running outdoors. You run out, or when you go from, so a treadmill, like I don't really put the incline up. I'll just have the set pace.
Yeah.
And I find, oh God, this is quite easy. Like it's boring for me, but then I'll go outdoors and then suddenly like I'll lose all my oxygen. I'll have to start running up hills. I'll be getting stitches. So do you find that switching from the hills of Sheffield cycling to kind of then going on a track, it's not a hill, but it's like a different... Like, do you feel that kind of... Like, it looks sideways,
You just feel upright.
Do you,
You don't
yeah?
feel like you're on a tilt. Maybe when you're full gas on the bottom of the track,
yeah,
like racing, you probably do feel a bit... It's almost like a bit like G-force. It, like, throws you around.
Yeah, of course.
Like, it's a bit of a slingshot sort of effect. But whenever you're riding just normally, you just feels like you're
but
riding
But naturally, it isn't flat, though, is it? Like,
no, the bank...
Yeah, it is actually
The banks
fully.
Are, like... 40 something degree.
Is it like a 40 degree incline, which is pretty steep, really?
Yeah, it's
hence why you've got to start in like with someone either holding or.
Yeah, see, in the straights, it flattens out to. You can walk up it pretty comfortably. It's not that steep. Yeah. Obviously, the banks turn quite steep.
It's pretty awesome. But you don't really notice kind of like.
No, I've done it for so long now, it's just.
It's just, yeah.
Normal.
Natural to you. So, kind of, did you like. Were you a part of like cycling clubs growing up? Is that something that kind of helped you get into this? Or?
So when I first started, I started with something called Cycle Speedway.
Right.
So I don't know if you know the motor speedway. It's on like a dirt track and they sort of like drift around and stuff like that.
We did like a cycle version
of that.
What kind of, do you have like mountain bikes for that or?
It's almost like a track bike, but it's it's not fixed, so you can stop pedaling.
You can stop, yeah.
And it's got sort of little like knobbly tires on it. It's pretty unique. It's a bit of a
Yeah, that I was going to say. That's
sport. It's not like a big thing.
I was going to say, because people do like mountain biking where they'll... Yeah. I've got a place near me where people go down like mud tracks and stuff.
Yeah, it's on like an oval type track. And you do start out of like a... on like a start gate.
You'd probably make some insane GoPro footage from those things, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you do any like recording, or do you take your own, like, do you have a GoPro or anything along those lines?
I do a bit here and there on the track if I'm sort of, yeah. If we're doing efforts behind the motorbike, I'll put the GoPro on and...
I was going to say, tell Ross you want to take his really expensive camera with you. Hold it in one hand, I'm sure he'll be fine,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm sure he will as well.
he'd be on the sidelines, like, so nervous.
Yeah.
That's wicked, though. So, like, having that experience of doing, like, speedway?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it's very technical, small gears.
Would Ross have done something similar, do you reckon, to have got into BMXing?
I think he just went straight into BMX.
Straight into
it. Yeah, just something.
It's a cool thing to do when you're growing up. Like, yeah. BMX was like all the rage when like I was growing up as well.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things that you see people do and you're like, that's sweet. It's like when you watch Tony Hawk's growing up.
Yeah.
And you're like, that guy's awesome, but also crazy, because you're thinking they're probably going to like snap their neck at any moment. And... But I'd imagine, like, do you feel quite safe? You said you feel safe on the track. Have you ever had any, like, accidents, crashes?
Oh, yeah, I've had plenty of crashes.
And, like, are they... Like, because obviously you haven't got, like, padding, shoulder pads and stuff, shin pads.
The kit just, like, melts.
Does it? Does it what? Because it's so warm.
It just burns away.
What?
Because obviously...
The rubber on the...
Yeah, we just... Yeah. Because it's obviously... It's lycra. It's not made of much. It's
so
thin anyway.
Through it pretty
much. As soon as you hit the wood... At any speed, it just burns a hole in it.
Do you get like bad muscular damage from that? Like, I was gonna say, because if it's quite thin, like you'd have thought, when you land on certain, does the bike maybe land
normally
on
you? You slide a lot. You get a lot of splinters and friction burns.
Splinters would be rough. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't get too like bruised. It's mainly friction burns.
I suppose because you're going with the momentum anyway, like you're saying. So because you're going in that like kind of straight trajectory, it's like you say, you're gonna get crazy kind of like friction burns, splinters and stuff, but beyond that maybe like a couple of bruises, but
you'd be unlucky to get anything worse than a friction burn.
I was gonna say, it's probably a good thing that you haven't had more than that, like, because injuries, I'd imagine that's probably... Is that ever anything that like weighs on you, thinking if I were to get injured, this would like throw my career back, sort of thing?
Not within training. It's more, I'm more worried about getting injured when I'm not training,
from like the gym,
or even if I'm like, if I'm like out with mates or something, or I'm on holiday, for example, if you're like cliff jumping or something like that, and you like you broke your foot or something, because you, do you know what I mean? That's the time I most worry about injury.
I don't
worry at all when I'm training.
When you're actually in the training, you're all good. I have a friend that's like a really keen climber, and like he does a lot of bouldering generally, like indoors, and I go with him to that, and it's... You jump down, you fall on the pads. Like, it's a bit scary jumping from the top anyway, but you're like, oh, I'm going to be good. Sometimes he wants to go outdoors and do it. And like, when he goes, he's got no fear. He hasn't got that kind of like flick, that switch in his mind.
Yeah.
So like, he'll climb up to the top of this boulder and he'll just stand on top of it. And I'll get like a third halfway. And then I'm like, is this worth the risk?
Yeah.
And he like... I'm not even passionate about this. It's something that I'll enjoy doing with him.
Yeah.
But it's more about being there with your friends.
Yeah.
So for him, he loves it, and like, it's an adrenaline boost. For me, I'm just like, I'm thinking of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So like you're saying, when you're out and about with friends, sometimes you be a bit more cautious, which is, I think that's natural. I think everyone, not everyone, but most people will have that kind of like gauge at least. So I've asked about the cycling teams. Oh yeah. So obviously team oriented, like, are you generally really close? Do you do things outside of the sport with your teammates, or...?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Sometimes too much time with people, it can turn a bit sort of like sour.
Yeah.
At times. Yeah. If you... Especially if you like, you see them every day, then you live with them.
Yeah.
And then you're doing extra stuff with them.
He's talking about you, Ross. You can deny that if you want.
No.
Ross is sound. Like, I can't imagine... I can imagine like any... friendship event, sometimes you're like butt heads, right? But
no, not with Ross though, because
we're on
different squads within the team.
Yeah.
We don't, other than a bit of stuff in the gym, we don't train together normally.
So we just
live together.
Oh, so that's the best kind of thing.
Good balance.
Yeah, you get back from like the stress of training or whatever sometimes,
and
you just chill out and play games and just talk about... That's your time to like vent about the day, pretty much. So like, Are there like set like personality traits? Are there things about teammates that you look for specifically, or you see in yourself that you would like other people to also have?
The big thing is honesty. If someone's not doing something right in the team, don't sort of sit on it.
You'd rather someone sit on the fence.
I'd rather someone say, instead of hurting my feelings, I'd rather them go, you're doing this terrible.
Yeah.
And I know how I can fix it. Rather than be like, oh, that was all right. I'd rather, like, the honesty within the team, I'd rather it be like there.
Be, not brutal, yeah, but not, like,
not like mean about it, but yeah. Just there's so a way we can to work the team together.
Yeah, because you only improve by helping each other, really. Yeah. And like, if you're lying to somebody and not giving them that kind of credit that they deserve, then you're not going to grow, because you're just going to be keeping things back from each other.
Yeah.
I've always found that, like, I don't like it when people are like nasty, but like, I'd rather somebody just tell me straight. I'd be like, listen, I'm cool with you just giving me your honest feedback.
Yeah.
That'll propel you further.
Saves time as well.
Yeah. Because some people might procrastinate on a thought for weeks, and then they let that bubble up until then.
It's too late to fix it then.
And then they'll tell you like 2 weeks later, and you're like, if you'd have said it at the start, I could have amended it. You know, we could have done it together.
Yeah, definitely.
Rather than just wait for a competition or something to happen and then be like, by the way, you're doing this wrong. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Why didn't you ever mention that? Yeah, I can see that. Like, I'd imagine, like, on top of, like, honesty, you probably hope that everyone's, like, determined and
hard
training.
Hardworking, and the classic sort of.
So, like, at the gym, what do you do? What kind of, like, how many hours are you dedicating to the gym?
With that, it sort of depends how, what sort of block we're in.
Yeah.
So at the minute, we're in a strength block, so we'll have 3 sort of 2-hour session a week where it's just...
Yeah.
There's obviously no cardio stuff in the gym. It's literally just...
Pure weightlifting.
Squat after squat and leg press.
Do you take a lot of breaks, or do you just...
I never really time. It's sort of a bit of irregular. I might have a couple of minutes after one set, a couple of minutes after another. It depends how I feel.
Do you have someone that, like, creates kind of like the routine for you?
Yeah.
Oh, so you've got a set route. That's awesome.
So we've got our own sort of S&C coach within the squad.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty cool.
He puts the hours in and plans everyone's training.
Yeah. I was gonna say, do you have like nutritionists, or is the nutrition your own kind of?
Yeah. We have we do get nutrition advice, but
yeah, they don't cook for you.
Yeah.
So generally, in terms of like nutrition, what kind of meals would you eat? What do you consider to be healthy for your sport? Because people talk about foods as if like these are healthy foods, they're unhealthy foods, but it's not as black and white as that. You can eat conceptually unhealthy foods, but it's about the moderation, isn't it?
Yeah, see, we always got told sort of like an 80-20 rule. So 80% of the time, you need to be sort of like spot on with it.
Yeah.
20%. And then you can have like a bit of treat, like some treats here and there. But as much as I like to sort of go through phases of like black and white, cutting stuff out so I can get nice and sort of trim for racing, it's everything in moderation. If I want to eat something that's a little bit like fatty, I'll eat it. Because there's no point in making yourself unhappy.
Because
that's when you lose the enjoyment out of it if it's so regimented.
I think that's a really important message for like children and people.
Yeah, definitely.
People who are just getting into dieting, going to the gym, doing exercise, because there's a lot of like societal pressure on like children to like to eat a certain way, and you can't eat this because it's not healthy. But at the end of the day, the key is just being consistent, because whenever I like to try and keep generally pretty healthy, and like for me, I'll eat the set thing, you know, I'll eat a lot of like chicken and you know, broccoli, like healthy, like rices and stuff. But I'll always know kind of like when my body will tell me when I'm feeling weak or when I'm feeling a little bit down. And when I feel like a little bit demotivated or lower, then I'll be like, do you know what? It's okay just to have something nice.
Because
I think if you micro everything, then it becomes obsessive and that's all you think about. And
definitely.
You don't leave space to focus on life, on your training.
Yeah.
And so no, I think that's pretty much a key point, really. Because that, like, have you got foods that you really enjoy eating? Do you have like routine foods that you could eat pretty much every day, or
as in like healthy routine foods or
anything really? Like whatever you find that like every day you're like, oh, I love eating that thing. I could eat that pretty much every day, and maybe you do eat it most days.
I enjoy a lot of food. I won't be able to pinpoint
Are you quite spontaneous with like your cooking? And
I think the only thing that I know I have all the time is coffee.
So you're a big coffee fan. Yeah. Okay, what kind of do you have like, instant or?
Nah, so like with a cafetiere and ground coffee. Yeah,
so. I was hoping you would say that. I mean, I can't really practice what I preach because like a lot of the time I end up having instant because I'm in a rush. Yeah. But like a cafetiere, proper coffee is so much better. I always find whenever I like consume like regular instant coffee, I find that like my mental health, it has like a big effect.
Yeah.
Caffeine for me as well. I think because I'm like quite speaking, like I have to be really careful with like my caffeine intake. So like sometimes I'll just completely cut caffeine, but I love the taste of coffee.
Yeah.
So it's hard to like escape that, right?
Something I used to hate coffee when I was younger.
Yeah.
I remember saying to my parents, don't know how you drink that.
And then you grew
and
up.
And I moved to Manchester.
Yeah.
Tried all the coffee shops in Manchester.
So it's a new thing, pretty much? Or
in the last year or two, yeah.
What? That's crazy. Because like most people, once they get to a certain age, like they either like coffee or not. Because like in the office with us, we've got like three or four of us that almost like in sync will go make a coffee at a certain time. Or when one goes to make it, you're like, coffee.
Yeah.
And then you've got like the other three or four who've never touched kind of like a hot... They just don't drink hot drinks at all.
Yeah.
And like, I find for me, that's crazy because like I drink a lot of water. But beyond that, like I feel like my day would be boring. I feel like the cool thing with coffee is that it passes time. Like, it keeps
you
warm.
Like an activity making it.
Yeah, you make it. And then not only that, but then you have it on your desk. And, like, when you're a little bit bored, you just procrastinate and just have, like, a sip of your coffee or whatever. So, big coffee fan as well, then. Like, how many a day?
Normally always in the morning. So, I wouldn't drink it late through the day. I might have two at a push three.
Yeah, I'm the same.
But
I used to drink
big tea
drinker
at night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I drink a lot of tea.
Green teas or just regular? Like, with milk?
I'll drink green tea if I feel bloated after a massive meal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, normally it's just...
It's pretty
classic,
much...
The classic Tetley or the PG tips.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm the same. Like, sometimes, like, if I'm in the mood, I'll kind of make, like, a lemon tea or
fruit teas aren't bad, actually.
Yeah, once in a while, fruit teas are good. But, like, I couldn't drink it consistently. Like, I just like having milk. Like, it just makes things a lot nicer, I feel. I think that's a British thing though, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I lived in Asia for a while, and when I was in China, like all they drink is green tea.
Yeah.
And it's like breakfast, you have green tea with it. Lunch, and I was like, where's the milk? I was like, I need some sort of like sustenance in this drink. But yeah, I agree with you on the coffee. Can we get this on film? So to the future generations of sports people. Sit with your feet up after you've trained.
Gaming.
Are you allowed to be normal as an athlete?
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of the athletes I speak to are pretty normal. You wouldn't believe it, right? But everyone assume you're these superhumans that only train all day, which you do train a lot of your day.
Yeah.
But you go home and, like, we play the same type of games and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's attainable. So what you're doing right now is something that future generations could do.
Yeah.
How would you, like, encourage them to kind of... What would be, like, a message to, like, children or people who you've been in that position in the past and you would like to inspire them to do something similar?
What,
like,
get into sport?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like exactly your specific sport. It doesn't have to be competitive. How would you like encourage them just to get into sport and do things that they would feel a bit proud of, you know?
Well, my experience of sport's been it's pretty mega, really. I've been to so many different countries.
Yeah.
I think what you have to take away from... Obviously, there is stress with competing, but enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because not many people get to go to all these different countries, and when you finish the race and you can sightsee. So you get a lot of experience, try different foods, different cultures, just through it. So although you are in sort of a more of a high stress sort of environment and sort of workplace, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's not...
You get to let your hair down. It's not just... I think a lot of people envision like being a pro athlete, especially somebody doing something like sprinting like you're doing.
Yeah.
And they probably picture that and they think, oh my God, if I mess up, that's my career over and it's ruined. But as long as you bounce back and as long as you show that resilience and you have fun with what you're doing, you'll get so many memories and experiences. And at the end of the day, like, yes, you want to win. Yes, you want to achieve things. But you'll also remember a lot of the hardships and a lot of the things, just the traveling and stuff that you've done, right? It's still a memory, good or bad. And like, I think a lot of people don't try things, and a lot of people are so afraid of failure that they never start something in the first place. Whereas you firsthand, you know, you've gone for it from the moment you were young. You joined that program that not a lot of people would do. And then you've had been able to like experience all these crazy cultures and stuff, which is eye-opening. I'm sure going to different countries has given you a much better perspective on life in general. Where's like the best place you've been? Have you got like a favorite?
My favorite place was a part of Switzerland called Aigle.
Right.
And we were there for for 3 weeks, and the hotel was literally just in the middle of the mountains, looking out onto more mountains.
Oh my god.
And like,
the Alps are in Switzerland. Swiss Alps, isn't it? Yeah. Did you? Is that where you roughly
roundabout? But you like look out and there's, you can see all these different chalets and the clouds are like low level, so you can see above and below. That it's pretty cool.
Alright, that's a lie. No having fun, kids. Like literally, look me in the eyes, start working hard, otherwise you're not going to the Alps. Just saying, yeah. That's a lie. No, that would be pretty incredible. Yeah. Like, so you were just there with your coffee sipping.
Yeah, on the balcony before race day and stuff.
Yeah.
Just looking out.
What, you were racing on the mountains or?
No, I was down the mountain.
Down the mountain, Jesus. So next thing I've got, obviously you've got your Team GB kit on with you.
Yeah.
Obviously you've got your racing kit as well.
Podium jersey.
Yeah, can I show that?
Yeah.
You don't mind me picking it up?
No, yeah.
So I'll pick up the medal first and foremost. So this is your UEC. This is the track team sprint men's under 23. And that was this year as well.
Yeah.
So it's very, very recent. I love like with like the stars and everything. What's it got written on the back? What language is that? I should know that. I feel like I recognise it. You're like, I have no idea. Oh, wait, it's different languages. Ah, I see, because it says European champions there. That's sweet. So there we go. I don't know. Probably get a zoom in on that. I'll take pictures of it and everything as well.
Yeah, nice one.
Oh, it's got the actual cyclist. Well, it's obviously not your face, but
I'd be impressed if it
If they just like superimposed your face onto the front of it. That would be quite a creepy medal if they just put people's faces on. Imagine just like a blown up, like stuck out or whatever. Put that down carefully so I don't break anything.
Funny story about that. I took it out of the bag on before the podium and the bottom of the medal dropped off.
What, as in like a piece of... Oh, that whole bit.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Did you chip it?
No. So they actually gave me like...
A replacement one.
For the podium, I had to go up in like the women's scratch race medal.
Yeah.
Just because it was a gold medal, that's the only spare one they had at the time.
Oh my god.
So yeah, and then they got me a replacement.
That's cool that they did get you a replacement. Did you get to keep the original or?
Nah, just.
That would have been a funny like. Yeah. Imagine taking that round with you.
Yeah, just the stories. Just the end of it.
Just the like bottom bit of it, whatever. Well, so I'll try not to like replicate that and do the same. And then obviously you've got. Is this what you wore to the
European
Champions?
That's what we...
training?
That's what we got given on the podium. That's the European Championship jersey.
Super cool. Also, it's very like lightweight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very thin material. Is that polyester? No, that...
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
There's a mix of all sorts.
Made in Italy. Italy, very big for cycling, isn't it? Yeah. Very... I see like a lot of like the top tier bikes that I see are Italian like designs or whatever.
So yeah, that's what that jersey you win.
Cool, isn't it?
It's when you win the Europeans.
Do you carry around like a lot of gels and stuff with you, or?
I don't wear that.
You don't ever. You've never actually worn it to compare. Yeah.
Until when I got off the podium, I think I wore it back to the hotel in the bus.
Yeah. Will you frame it at some point? Do you reckon?
Probably.
Then, yeah. Let me fold that.
But yeah, don't
it's
wear
nice,
that.
Nice, isn't it? It's awesome. That's cool. It's always. I like getting free things. Like, I love it when...
Yeah, free cycling kit.
Well, it's not... Technically, it's not free. You actually earned it. I mean, you actually had to work hard to earn those things. But it's always nice when you go to, like, events and stuff and they give you something. You're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, I look... Clothing, especially, is just, like... Or shoes. Two things that are just, yeah, pretty amazing. Did I even ask you the question? I don't think I did. I think I got carried away by your medal. So I was going to say, how does it feel to get, like... chosen and to represent Great Britain in the first place? What's the feeling of like?
The feeling has not changed since the first time I did it to now. It's just like a privilege.
Yeah. Is it quite like humbling to be in a position where you're actually representing your country in something?
It doesn't always seem real at the time.
Yeah.
It just seems sort of like,
oh, why me, sort of thing. Yeah, you just, you feel like, oh, I'm just this average, not average person, but like, I'm just any other person, so why am I in this, like, privileged position?
Yeah.
Deserve, though, like, I'd, like, probably feel, like, if I had, like, the Wales flight, or the, you know, GB in general, I think that would be quite a mind-blowing moment, like, the first time you put that kind of gear on. I think even more so with, like, clothes or something, when you put, like, that top on, it's got, like, Great Britain.
Yeah.
You see that, and you're like, wow, it's hitting home now, this is actually real, right? But, yeah, I probably won't ever get that chance, but, I mean, I get to vicariously live that through your thing, so... Don't worry, I'm not going to steal your jumper. You'd be like, what? Magician. So yeah, obviously you've talked about this a bit. So when you're not cycling, what other forms of exercise help you stay in shape? So obviously going to the gym.
Yeah, it's mainly gym and bike stuff.
Do you do any ice hockey at all anymore? Or
no, I haven't. I went with my girlfriend to an ice rink just before lockdown. And I'm not as good as I remember I was being. No. I was a little rusty.
I'd imagine you're still probably better than most of the people that go there.
I can get around. Yeah. I can get around all right.
I'm the guy that's either holding on to the side for the whole time, or I'm just like, the moment I get off, I'm like, and then I just collapse and, yeah. I break the ice and fall
through. Like Bambi on ice.
Probably worse, yeah. I mean, like, at least Bambi kind of made it look cool when, like, legs were moving or whatever. But, yeah, I think... So, like, so it's very kind of... The sports that you inhabit, the ones that you the ones that you participate in are generally the ones you stick to. You don't really kind of deviate too much. I suppose it would cause like a lot of like, what's the word for it? Dissociation. Like if you were kind of doing one sport, then suddenly you started playing football or something.
Yeah.
Like you're putting yourself at more risk for injury.
Yeah.
You're also putting yourself in an environment where you're working like different muscle groups and things, which wouldn't be beneficial.
The time as well is...
Yeah.
The only time I do anything different is when I've got a bit of time off, like sort of off season, and I'll spend most of my time walking my dog.
Do you?
Back at my mum and dad's, yeah.
Yeah. How often do you not get to see your family very often anymore? Then?
No, I do. I'll go home probably 3 weekends out of the month.
Oh, so okay. So you do
Sheffield's
see
only from my house. It's only an hour.
Yeah.
So it's that's not.
So it's not bad, it's not, at, not all, bad at all. Yeah. Out of interest, like any of your family, do you have like brothers, sisters?
Yeah, brother and sister.
Do like any of them, are they keen like sports people or like your dad or?
My sister's ran a couple of marathons.
Right,
that's only recently though.
Yeah.
She sort of did a hell of a lot of training through lockdown.
It's very impressive though, because like.
Well, she did a solo one through the peaks.
Oh, cool.
Because she was supposed to, she was doing a marathon and it got cancelled because of COVID.
Right.
But she just ran it on her own through the peaks.
So she didn't even
made a route up and just ran it.
Now that's even more dedicated because we had to do a thing for Race Against Hunger here, and it's like a virtual race essentially. So you've got to run. I can't remember what it was. I think I did like 10 miles. I think it was. But you had to come up with your own route and things. And I found that it was a lot harder because like you're having to motivate yourself to do something where there'd normally be thousands of people going through the same torment as you pretty much. So like fair play to do 2 marathons is pretty impressive. So you come from a relatively sporty background at least.
Yeah, nobody else with cycling though.
So your dad didn't like have any involvement, didn't...
Well, I mean...
Now he does, yeah. But even
he
then...
He was a sort of backbone, taking me everywhere and... Making sure I got
chauffeur.
To it.
Sounds like my dad. Taxi driver, essentially.
Making sure I got there, I had everything right, settled.
Yeah. So he kind of put everything in place for you to achieve those goals, pretty much. So I've got a couple of sports psychology other ones, and then after that, we've already asked about nutrition. Do you have any, like... Oh, we've talked about this, pre-race habits. You've talked about music.
Yeah.
Is there anything you do just in the run-up to a race to kind of get ready?
Probably have a cold shower. The morning of the race.
Do you have... I talk about this a lot. Cold showers? There's something...
Just on the race day. Just
sort
of... Oh,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, cold showers are awesome.
Oh, you just... There we go. Yeah. So the third member is off camera. So you... Like, he had to jump in because it's an important thing for him. Cold showers. Big deal.
I had a shower every morning with a glass of cold water.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you ever get in when it is freezing cold, though?
That's the only time you've got to.
Yeah, I have to do that.
I could not have a hot shower.
And then go cold.
Really?
You've got to straight on the cold and just brace it.
I think you're very brave to do the other way. Because I think I have to just... what I'll do is I'll kind of
psych yourself up for
it. Do you do like, I do like breathing. Yeah. Have you ever watched Wim Hof? Do you know who he is?
Yeah, yeah. We did it. We did about it in when I did sports and exercise science.
Oh yeah, so sports psychology, and it was the same deal as well. Like
the ice man,
yeah. And like he literally just jumps in kind of like cold exposure tanks full of ice. First thing in the morning, he'll run outside. I mean, I wouldn't go to that degree, but I think like you have to just do like some deep breathing, and then you psych yourself up and you step in, and then after like 30 seconds you feel great.
Yeah.
And then what I'll do is I'll kind of like push the shower head away from me a bit so I'm not so cold.
Yeah.
But I think like Anthony Joshua talks about it a lot, and he says obviously for him, like obviously I suppose it's not helping him at the moment, but big Tyson Fury fan. But obviously having cold showers is something that's like helped him kind of set himself up for the day.
It just wakes you up.
It's like, do you ever make your own bed? That's the thing. I mean, I don't really, but it's one of those things people tell you to do to kind of get into a routine. Because if you make your bed, it's like you've accomplished the first goal of the day.
Yeah, see, at race day, maids, isn't it? Maids sort it when they come and do room service.
I was going to say, on race day, you're probably not like, oh, sorry, guys, I can't do my race 20 minutes. I've got to make my bed. Go back to the hotel for that. But yeah, I mean, cold showers, that's a good staple to have. I think that probably helped you get your gold as well.
Yeah.
Cold showers. No, I can't say gold shower. That's incomplete.
Yeah.
Not going down that route. How do you combat the fear of letting your teammates down? Do you ever feel like, oh God, what if...
Oh, all the time.
Do you?
All the time.
Do those things run through your mind? Do they run through your teammates' mind as well?
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah.
Not that they show it, and I don't normally show it.
I suppose if it's something you ever talked about, maybe that would put them off.
Talk about it with the coaches.
Yeah. Do you have like specific sports psychology coach? Because obviously that's a really good point. Because obviously with this being about sports psychology, like a lot of people don't have that support network or anyone they can go to actually talk about not only just their own mental health, but maybe kind of the pressures of their sport, the performance anxiety, the effects of teammates and like cohesion and all having different personalities.
Yeah.
So have you got somebody in place, like a coach, like that you're able to open up to?
Yeah, yeah. So for our team, we've got two coaches for our squad.
Yeah.
Sort of share the workload. We've got the gym coach, and then we've got all like the support staff of like, if we needed to speak to like physios or like psychologists, they all work together.
Do you feel like close enough to most of those people that you can go and just chat about not anything, but kind
the
of,
door's always open if you like, need it.
Yeah, that's a really good system to have, because a lot of places, and I'd imagine a lot of like sports, coaches are probably set in their ways and might not have those characteristics. So having somebody just to relate to and be able to just, not vent to, but at least share your problems is a nice like avenue that you can just like unload that pressure a little bit more.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Like obviously, you know, that's why when somebody has that mental health issues in general, most people don't have like family they can talk to, which is why they're encouraged to go and see like a health practitioner. But a lot of people don't do that, do they? So it's nice that you've got those people in place, pretty much. Let's talk on. Okay, let's go from talking about mental health. Let's talk about fun random. So I've got some random questions here. A couple of them, I'll be honest, I found it on like websites that were like things not to ask cyclists.
Cool.
But I think some of these are cool. So, like, how many cycling gadgets do you own? Because, like, as a cyclist, like, my dad just doesn't stop buying things. He's got head torches, he's got lights, he's got everything you could think of for cycling, pretty much.
I don't actually know. Well, I've got a lot of...
Not specific, yeah. Like,
a lot
do
of
you
different
have a lot?
Stuff.
How many of them do you use?
It varies depending on... If I'm riding out on the road, if I'm...
Are you an impulsive buyer? Do you ever just think, oh, I'd love that for, like, my cycling? And then you get it, and then you use it a couple of times, and you're like... Mm.
Not too much with cycling, because we do get a lot of stuff provided from British Cycling, but I am an impulsive buyer for different stuff.
Like gaming-related stuff,
either gaming
technology...
Related or fashion stuff.
Fashion, okay. Yeah. Like, what kind of... Will you buy from, like... I don't even really know the big companies, but... Gucci...
Yeah.
So you'll literally go out and buy...
So, from Selfridges and...
See, I need a new career. I need to work on this. See, I'm there going to JD Sport. Like,
I'll go there as well.
JD's quite expensive. Not expensive, but...
It's gone up in the...
JD is much more kind of... It's not high street prices, is it, anymore?
Sort of market's what it used to be.
Yeah, because I've always thought it was the same as Sports Direct. And I went in there one day and then I realised that I was completely
like,
out of my depth.
It's like 100 quid for a tracksuit.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you literally went... They're called tracksuits, but I mean it's 100 quid for a tracksuit.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Might as well just go to Gucci. Get your tracksuits from Gucci instead. Next one I've got is, do you ever take your own bicycle to competitions, or are they pre-prepared, custom-made for use?
So they're not custom for us specifically, but they're fitted for us.
Yeah.
So they're a generic bike. I don't use my own, but I use the program's bikes.
Right.
It is my bike, but it's owned, but by, it's owned by the program.
Yeah, gotcha.
But yeah, they're all like bike fitted to us, and
so they
with like the geometry and everything for saddle height, bar length.
So they'll analyse all those things. You've got a specialist that will just go, like one of your coaches, or is this like an actual specialist will come in to?
We do have there are people who specialise in that work for us, but most of it's done by mechanics and coaches.
That's pretty neat. So you don't have to worry about kind of like tailoring it yourself.
No.
Because like the thing you find with, you know, I'll relate to like gaming terms, mouse sensitivity or controller sensitivity.
Yeah.
One game you might be on like 5 sensitivity and it's like quite slow. Then you move over to the next game and it's the same sensitivity, but the game in-game sensitivity is much quicker. So you're like, like with a bike, if you're having to do that yourself, then you're going to get something a little bit wrong. Whereas if you've got someone that knows precisely your kind of your stats per se, then yeah, you never have to worry about that again. So last couple of questions I've got for you. First one being, what's your biggest pet peeve about track cycling? If there's one thing that you just like, I don't know, it's always irked you a little bit.
That's a tough one.
It's tough on the spot, in fairness.
Pet peeve.
Is there something like before you train or during training that every now and then, maybe with the bike, having to like, or having to wear certain clothing or something?
I mean, it's not too much of a peeve, but it's something that winds me up. The expectation that everyone just thinks you always shave your legs.
Is that... Yeah.
We shave our legs for racing.
Why would that be a bad thing? Like, I mean...
Because...
Harry gets a similar judgment in the office because he paints his nails. So if you look, like, you always get people that will, like, judge something like that. I think it's cool, though. Like, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't... It's not... Was it emasculating to do something that is...
If you don't have your legs shaved, someone might go, oh, why are your legs so hairy?
Yeah. So it's the opposite.
Yeah,
so it's like the reverse. So
yeah.
If you don't have your legs shaved, they're like, oh, why have you not...
Yeah, well, why have you not shaved your legs?
How much of a difference does it legitimately make?
In training, I don't worry about it. Like, I won't turn up to a race day with...
Yeah.
Big hairy legs.
Do you think it helps with being like more aerodynamic, or
it will to an extent?
It will to an extent. So like there's even a small performance enhancement in just shaving your legs or something like that. So that's kind of like being able to like take a step up on the next person. So that person that maybe doesn't shave their legs might be at a slight disadvantage, but realistically, it's probably only going to be very minor, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I don't normally shave my legs during a race.
Do you ever just like, when the person's like next to you or the other team, you see them like here and you're like, like, and then all of a sudden like the whole demeanour just diminishes and they just become like the shell of a human being. They're like, I haven't shaved my legs, and then they just break down and lose. No?
That's not happening. Not yet. But
could happen. Still time. So this is also kind of ties in with that. What garment of clothing would you enforce everyone to wear at all times if you had the jurisdiction? Doesn't have to be cycling related. If you say you obviously like fashion, so if there was one thing if you could get everyone to wear and you'd be like, that's a cooler society, what would you say?
Nice designer t-shirt or something.
Like a t-shirt with like a logo on it, like a polo. This is brand advertisement, isn't it? I've got a sponsor. You're like, oh, my sponsors.
Yeah.
You should see, this is where you come in and say Team GB.
Yeah, team GB kit.
That's the one. And last but not least for the questions, are you a stat hunter? So do you use Strava? I think I saw that you had a Strava page.
I do have a Strava page. I haven't used it in a good few years.
Did you ever like use it actively? Because I know like my dad is obsessively on it. He comes back from his cycle and he's like analysing cadence, everything. Like,
yeah, when I was younger, I used to chase a lot of comms.
Yeah.
And I'd sort of...
What does chasing comms mean?
Like, just go around looking for him and...
Wait, what's a...
Com, King of the Mountain. It's like a mountain. So it's like a, you'd have a segment and it would be for however long it takes you from to get from A to B.
Oh,
and that's
I see.
Classed as like the King of the Mountain. It's not necessarily right. Not necessarily always on a hill, but yeah. It's just a section of road that's
so to see of, who could. So would you who, like compete with people to do that?
Yeah, on Strava. So 1 week.
I've never used Strava. You see, is that something that's quite a common thing on Strava?
I think so.
Right. Okay.
Like 1 week,
sense.
I might have got the King of the Mountain on it.
Yeah.
And then somebody I used to race with, they'd go on the same bit of road to try and beat it. It'd be like a bit of a...
Yeah, like a little thing to like
petty,
push
but,
yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe it helped though. You don't know how much that helped with like your development.
Yeah.
Makes me think of like, do you know when Pokemon Go just first came
out?
And everyone were going out at like midnight to like the outside of these churches to see who could catch like the best Pokemon at like 1 a.m. And you've got like people out the windows like, shut up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to sleep. Yeah, that was basically me and my friends, complete nerds. So that's all of the questions I've got for you. So once again, I've been speaking with James Bunting. So under 23, European champion, track cyclist. And Harry's pointing at me to point this camera because this is our new camera to end it out. So I don't know, I guess we both look at this. You've put us on the spot now. We feel like... Like we both just like whoop. See, there we go. Maybe I'd be a good like you know solution for your team. So if ever you need somebody to like in, we'll do it in time. Okay, so 3, 2, 1. So I, Jordan, have been joined by James Bunting today for the Sports for Champions podcast, and let me just say it's been really, really good. And he's probably never going to speak to me ever again after I've just made that terrible pun. So we're going to end on that. Have you got any last words?
No, it's been a pleasure to be here.
Peace. Thank you. Bye-bye. Sweet. Thank you so much, dude.